This is the Booze Dancing Entertainment Network, and we are all together again for another recording of What We Watch When We Drink, your unofficial podcast of Her Majesty the Queen, Elizabeth II. May she rest in peace. Hello, how are we, boys?
God save the king.
God save the king.
And nobody sing, please. Nobody sing. We are back, and we have a good one tonight. We have a special guest, someone new to our whiskey kinship.
Wait. Should I run an intro?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm sorry. Yep.
So, you know, hail to the queen, and let's roll the intro.
Welcome to What We Watch When We Drink, a Booze Dancing Entertainment Network podcast featuring lively discussions about movies, TV shows, and anything else that we're watching while we drink our favorite boozy beverages. If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
So soothing.
So professional.
So very soothing.
Semi-professional.
Well, we have a really special guest tonight. We are happy to invite into our studio from Escondido, California, way down towards San Diego. We're happy to welcome the Southern California market manager for Westward Whiskey, Hector Ramos.
Let me bring him in.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Thank y'all for bringing me on. It's been something I've been really nervous and excited for at the same time.
Don't be nervous.
Don't be nervous. No one will ever listen to this and see it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. We're just yapping on here. So let's talk just a tad here about you for the moment. How long have you been with Westward?
I've been with Westward as the distillery since the 2 years now, coming up in February. We've been around since 2004, but our sales force was just created in 2020. That was like the perfect time to start a sales force, right? But yeah, I came in on February 2021 and been with them since.
Were you in the adult beverage business before?
My entire professional career has been in beverage. Before Westward, I was with a distributor. So sales is pretty much all I've known and breathed and kind of molded myself into in the industry. But that was with a big distributor. And luckily, I'm still working with them through Westward. So it's been nothing but good things on my side.
Well, before we get too far along into this, why don't we drink whiskey? We're going to pop open one of these whiskeys that you so nicely,
yes,
kindly dropped off to my house and sent off to Ange and Mike. Where are we going to start?
Quick question. Where is Westward?
Westward is up in the Pacific Northwest. Everything we do is out of Portland, Oregon. So,
Okay. Yeah,
the first whiskey we'll be pouring tonight is this blue label. This is Westward Classic, and all of Westward's expressions are going to be American single malts.
So everybody poured?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
What's the ABV on this?
Yeah, so the first one is coming in at 45%. You're drinking 90 proof right now.
Lovely.
And before we indulge too much, why don't we do a little clink, right, Ange?
All right. Yes, gentlemen. Cheers.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers. So while we're sniffing this, Hector, why don't you tell us a little bit about Westward and maybe about the process that they use to produce their single malt?
Most definitely. So I'm just going to briefly talk on what we are. And we are doing American single malt out of Portland, Oregon. Everything we're doing is going to not have corn, nor will it have rye. It's all this right here. This is 100% malted barley. Two-row barley, to be specific, grown in California, Oregon, and Washington. And when we get all of that barley by way of Great Western Malting in Vancouver, Washington, it turns into pale ale beer. So at our distillery, everyone who's mad scientist enough to make the beautiful whiskey wizardry that comes out of our distillery all the time, everyone had a background in brewing. And yeah, everybody was a brewer, and what we do is make the best beer we can craft without hops, without carbonation, all with the end goal of creating the best whiskey that we can pump out. And that's what we have right here.
Were they craft brewers before they were distillers?
We were, but our distillery was not a brewery.
Okay, they were somewhere else.
Yeah, everybody came from different breweries. Some came from brewing schools. I like to say that we're brewers by heart, distillers by trade. And if any of y'all have ever done some sort of home brewing or brewing by nature, the progression after brewing, you can literally take that and distill it and make some fine spirit.
Boom. Well, should we nose this thing and get into it?
For sure.
Is this American oak?
Yes. If you take a step back to it too. So I know we said that we were brewers, but for Westward specifically, we're using Chico strain yeast. I don't know if that's getting a little too technical now, but basically if you've ever heard of Sierra Nevada pale ale beer, yes. They're out of Chico, California, and their strain of yeast 001 is what we're using, and it's kept alive by a brewery in Portland for us, and we utilize that. So from pale ale beer, we go ahead and distill that down two times over, and once we barrel it, it's going to be a new American oak, just like bourbons typically are.
It's delicious.
Yes, it's really good. You get a little bit of the grain on the nose, and maybe a little bit of citrus, and then the flavor, you got a nice grain profile. But there's a good amount of heat. It was really nice. It's a nice balance. How old is the whiskey?
Yeah, so everything at Westward is non-age stated. Typically, though, you're looking at anywhere between 2 to 7 years, 3 to 6 years on average. A 5 year is what is balanced into what we're putting out into market. But everything you were saying, Mike, from that nose being malt forward, a little bit of that grain and coming through with that citrus, those are all of the notes we're trying to hit every time we're putting out Westward Classic.
It's got some spice too.
Yeah, the finish is a little short, but it's a nice finish. It really is.
As it opens up, that finish will get longer, especially through the other expression. But yeah, that baking spice, for me, it's cinnamon and allspice that's coming through on that.
And this is the core item that is the same for all the other items, correct?
This is where it all starts. This is the core of what then turns into everything that we're going to be tasting. So honestly, if you'd want, you don't even have to rinse out your glassware. As soon as you're done with this, you could pour straight into the other and you won't have any off-putting notes coming through because it's all built off of this.
All right. That's the base. Yeah. Nice.
It's got a good hit of cinnamon.
I was actually at Westland about 4 years ago. At Westward, sorry.
Westward.
And that probably happens a lot, doesn't it?
Well, and then don't forget that they're Starward, too.
I know. And yes.
It gets a little confusing.
I mean, all three of those.
They're all wonderful, by the way.
They are, yes. I was at Westward, and I was just taken back by the amount of activity in such a small distillery. It was crazy. So my question, because this is three or four years ago, it felt like you guys were on top of each other. And I wonder what, at the time, and even more now, where's all the barrels stored? Is it all on site?
Yeah. So we're out of Portland. We're on the southeast side of town, right by in between the freeway and the train tracks. We're right there on Distillery Row. But our barrels are actually stored in our barrel house, lovingly named Jenny, because in Clackamas, that is the name of the street that our barrel house happens to live on. And that is where we are racking all of our barrels. But yeah, Aaron, like you said, it's almost like a controlled symphony of chaos, but it's all intentional. Angelo and Mike, if y'all are ever up in Portland and you haven't made your way out, and Aaron, if you make your way back out there, I'd love to give y'all the red carpet treatment out there. But we're continuously expanding. We've got more fermenters coming in now, and we've just installed a new bottling line. But for the moment, everything is still hand bottled, hand labeled. And once things are up and running, hopefully that goal is to really amp up the production that we're trajecting towards. But yeah, for the time being, 3,000 gallons worth of beer are brewed on one side, and then it goes over to the distillation side to make 5 barrels of what we just poured. But
well, our first whiskey here has been really delicious. I enjoy it. I've had this one many times, and it's a great starter whiskey, right? It's really good. Gives you the idea of what's going on there.
When you say a starter, you mean a starter for Westward, not Training Wheels whiskey.
This is the DNA for everything else they do, right?
Right.
And that's the beautiful thing too. We've been around as a distillery since 2004, so our training wheels are way taken off. when it comes to the world of whiskey and craft distilling, we're leaders in that space, as well as being amongst some of the greats in making this wave towards American single malt as a movement, you know? So this is definitely our DNA. And what I really like about this first dram is everything is so intentional in terms of doing everything low and slow with ale yeast to really bring out that fruit, so that it carries through as we distill and barrel. And the reason why we're not aging so long is because we don't need too much oak to strip away impurities. You know, it's all about just getting enough of that oakiness and enough of that vanillin to come through.
As you keep going through this one, it's a really easy drinking whiskey.
I find it's really clean. You don't need to age it to age stuff out of it, because there's nothing really you need to take out of it. It's really good. And I think it's interesting that you could put this up against the corn whiskey, something that's been rye and bourbon, to get the difference in what the grains really do to it. That this tastes totally different than anything else you're going to get. As you said, it's American whiskey. Yeah. It's a whole different class of whiskey. And this is a really good representation.
Everybody at the distillery is doing their best every single day. So I'm glad y'all are enjoying it.
And this, again, is 100% malted barley, right?
100%. All it's two-row malted barley coming out of the Pacific Northwest.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Well, we are What We Watch When We Drink on the Booze Dancing Network, and we are going to talk a little bit of TV tonight. In our first segment of Television Talk, we are going to talk about a show that is almost finished with its second season, a couple episodes to go, on Hulu. We're talking Reservation Dogs. Now, have we all kind of dug into this one a little bit?
I am absolutely hooked on the show.
I am too.
I've binged my way through, so.
Are you caught up, Hector?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, excellent. So, first impressions on it before we get into the nitty-gritty details.
Oh, wait, hold on. Mike didn't do his homework today.
I didn't do the homework.
No, he didn't.
He didn't do the homework.
Mike, while we're talking, you can kind of catch up.
At least I didn't fall asleep during class.
20 hours of TV. Ouch.
You know what? Hold on a second. He's going to the green room.
He's going to the green room. Boom. Bye.
This is like the crap scene from A Bronx Tale. Into the bathroom. Into the bathroom with you. You, coffee cake face, JoJo the whale, all into the bathroom.
JoJo the Whale?
No, you're not JoJo the Whale. You're going in with JoJo the Whale. Sorry, we digress.
We digress. Hector, first impressions on the show.
Honestly, I did not know that it was going to be a dramedy. So the comedy part kind of took me by surprise, because I was up in Los Angeles this weekend. So my wife had it on an iPad playing, and I was just listening to it all. I was like, this is kind of funny. Is this the show that I was supposed to be watching? And I didn't know the premise of it. I didn't know that it was about kids. And I could only imagine that it had to do with a reservation. So, but no, I really liked it. And it kind of took me by surprise. But I like picking things up that people recommend. So it's been a good time so far.
Now, you saw the entire first season?
First and second. And I thought the last episode was the finale. But
so did I.
I did too, but it's not.
Okay.
There's two more episodes. Yeah. I thought the same thing. So we've talked about it a few times. Last season, we talked about it a bit on the podcast. And we actually had a guest a few weeks ago who was the casting director for the very first episode. And
Lisa Zambetti.
Lisa Zambetti. And we got, who has a great podcast too, called Killer Casting. We got hooked early on. I think I got hooked kind of from the commercials when it was first, right?
It had me at jump.
It had me, and it was one of those things where, oh, is this going to be the best part of this series? It's going to be this 1 minute commercial, and it's going to suck. Am I seeing the best parts here in the trailer? And it totally overwhelmed me how good it was from the get-go. So for those who don't know about it, and it's a dramedy, maybe a teen dramedy, you could add, about Indigenous Americans on a reservation in Oklahoma. And it's from Sterling Harjo and You say his name because I can't say it, Angelo.
Taika Waititi?
That guy.
Well, he's the producer, correct? Sterling Harjo is basically the showrunner.
Well, they created it together, I believe. I think so. And I think Harjo is the showrunner, I believe. And it's on Hulu.
And the writer and sometimes director, and he kind of does everything.
Right. Yep. I want to say 100%, but 99.9% all indigenous cast, writers and directors, whole crew. The first time ever in American television, I would think. That's pretty amazing to have all of Native Americans in the whole crew. Filmed in Oklahoma. And our friend Lisa Zambetti said she had to go out to Oklahoma. And when they were looking for kids to be in the, you know, they were all over the place in Oklahoma looking for kids to be in the show. It's won numerous awards, Gotham Awards, Independent Spirit Award, Peabody Awards. It is highly acclaimed on lots of levels.
And I think it's rightfully so. I mean, it's got it all. It's funny. It's dramatic. I mean, there's a lot of serious moments. It's working on so many levels. It just blows me away. And it just keeps getting better, which is what really amazes me.
Like I said, the trailer or the commercials, I think the humor got me first. Right. But I wasn't completely sure, like Hector, is this a comedy or is it, what is this? What's going on here? There's been episodes that are just like side splitting. They are hilarious. They are so funny. And then there are episodes that are so intense and deep that you're not laughing at all. It's a little bit, you know, queasy. It goes all over the place.
There's a lot going on in the show. It's just really, really good. I mean, everything from the cast to the way it's made, the way it's shot, everything about it is just great.
So what about favorite characters? I apologize if you've talked about this before, but
no.
Who do y'all lean towards?
It's tough because, you know, what's nice about the show too is everybody kind of gets their moment. You know, it's not really focused on one character. Maybe there are maybe one character is more important than others, but they give everybody a shot, whether it's, you know, Brownie, cousin, uncle, whatever he is, or if it's Big, you know, the cop, what is he? The Light Horseman? Is that what they call him?
Yeah.
Right. Or if it's one of the kids or it's one of the kids' moms. It's just great the way they just touch upon every character.
And I think that's a really great way to start the series. It's about the four kids.
Right.
The four kids. And then you expand outward as the series kind of blossomed and you get to know their families more. There's been an episode on each of the kids a little bit more specifically. Right. And or some other character, right? So you really are getting some background and a little more depth on each character. I love Cheese.
Yes, Cheese is my guy.
I think I read that. I think he's the only kid that didn't have an acting background, I think.
That's what makes him even better.
Yeah.
Lisa Zambetti said she was actually there when they cast him, right?
Yes, that's what Lisa said.
I think he's one of the few that's actually from Oklahoma.
Yeah, he's a local kid, local-ish, yeah.
I'm right there with you, Cheese. Well, first of all, I didn't put two and two together that his real name is Chester. That's why they call him Cheese. Right. But either it's because it was one of the later episodes, like the one of the most recent ones where they really did a deep dive into his character. But I feel like there's so many things that I find similar to myself growing up and who I am now. And I think that's the beauty about this show too. Like there's so many characters here, not just the core four kids, that you could finally really find somebody who mimics a lot of things in your life, you know?
There's a lot of universality to it. Yes, it's about Native Americans, but they're just like us, right? Everyone's like each other. You can find yourself in all of these people in some way or more in some others. The human experience is the human experience, no matter where you are on the globe. I see a little bit of myself in a lot of them as well. I think that's really unique about it because you've got this really interesting environment that we're probably not used to being suburban Americans, but you've got kids and adults with all the same problems as we do and plus more because of where the situation they're in. So I think it really touches a nerve with all of us, a good nerve. Ange, were you going to say something?
I watched the first season a couple of times. I watched it with my son. I tried to get my wife into it, but she's been busy with other stuff. So haven't been able to nail her down. My other son, occasionally, he watched an episode or two, seemed to enjoy it. But it's just such a... And what's great, too, is like you get these occasional like cameos, you know, by folks. Like you've got, you know, Bill Burr in season one and was it Marc Maron was in the cheese episode?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Yep.
You know, was it Megan Mullally?
Maybe that's right. She's in it too.
She was in one of the episodes. Just these folks pop up. Who plays the doctor? The I guess the Asian American doctor. He's a comedian.
Bobby Lee.
Yeah, he's really, really funny.
One of my favorite characters that cameo, and she's actually in last week's episode. I cannot say her name. I'm just gonna butcher it here. She's a native Canadian.
Oh, the deer lady.
Yeah, Kanahio Torn, who I know from a show that's also on Hulu called Letterkenny, and she's one of the locals in the show. And she's got this interesting real life background. Her mother was a outspoken politically about the way First Nations peoples were being abused in Canada and taken advantage of. And she's actually, her mom's kind of famous, but she's an actress and she's great. And I love her as the deer lady.
You know who really cracks me up? The guy at the junkyard.
Oh my God. He is so great.
The owner of the junkyard, right?
Yeah. So his name's Kirk Fox. I don't really know what else he's been in, but he's like an actor, stand-up comic, all that good stuff.
It's hard not to walk away from the Native American side of things and the interesting spirituality of the show and from birth to death and everything in between. And from the beginning, the kids are dealing with one of their best friends who commit suicide and dealing with that in a spiritual way. You know, we just don't see this kind of stuff on television too often, especially with kids or teens. So I don't know. It hits so many bases for me. The overriding thing for me is that it's really funny most of the time.
The show has a good balance, like a good whiskey.
It does.
It's got humor. It has, you know, tragedy. It, you know, it's dealing with redemption, regret, righting wrongs, and all that kind of stuff. Yes. I mean, everybody's got a history. The history with everyone goes back like years. You know, there's also the whole story through line with, what is it, Lenora or Alora? The one girl, her mom died.
Yeah.
You know, and just how that kind of just fractured all the
everyone's lives.
Mm-hmm. Right. And just how it's just rippled through the whole community and how it's broken things up and how they're trying to pull things back together. It's neat because they don't really they don't hammer it home. You know, it just kind of feels like a natural part of the show. You know, it's like this isn't the teen suicide episode. It's all stuff going on in the background and it kind of bubbles to the surface and goes away. And, you know, they move past it, move through it, whatever they need to do to get, you know, to move on to the next thing.
My youngest and I watched Reservation Dogs together before she went off to college again. And we started watching a show in the summer while she was home. And it starred, I think the actor's name is Zahn McLaren, who plays Officer Big. Yeah. And he plays in this other show, he plays a cop also on a Navajo reservation in 1970s New Mexico. And it's a murder mystery kind of thing. He is just a great actor. He looks so familiar, like I've seen him before over the years. He's just so good. He's really good at being a cop, actually. He's good at being a serious cop role, and he's good in a humorous cop role. He's really good. And that was called?
Dark Winds.
Dark Wind. I was going to say Big Wind. Dark Winds. Yeah, I think it was AMC. I think it was right after or before Better Call Saul, I think.
Right. Yeah, it was sometime over the summer.
Yep. So another one to check out. Well, I'm glad we turned you on, Hector, to this. Does your wife like it?
She does. But she's one of those where like, if she's watching something, she definitely can't be doing anything else. So when she knew that I had to get through an entire two seasons, she was like, I'm going to leave that to you. So she probably had like an episode in, but yeah.
It moves fast though. I mean, you could go through a whole season in one night.
It's only 25 minute episodes, right?
Yep.
Yeah, roughly.
Yeah, they're pretty intense. As we're recording this, I think I said we're here on September 20th. I believe there's two more episodes. I think one tomorrow night, I believe. Or when is it coming out? Thursdays? Thursdays? And then, so we got two more weeks and it's done for the second season. So very excited to see where it's going to go. I don't know if it's been picked up for a third season. I hope so. Anyway, so we give it a thumbs up here at boozedancing.com.
Huge thumbs up. Huge.
We'll move on now to another whiskey from Westward. Hector, where are we going on our next one?
everybody at Westward, I said we were brewers before we were distillers. So the next pour is going to be the little gray label, and that is our stout cask.
This could be Mike's wheelhouse.
Mike, do you like stout beer?
He loves stout beer.
He's body shaming again.
What, stout? Calling you stout?
I'm JoJo the Whale, now I'm stout. Come on, man. Hurt my feelings, man.
Ouch.
You had those?
Deep down underneath all the layers.
Yes, our hearts are about three sizes too small, much like the Grinch.
Now.
All right, so are we all poured up on this?
Is this cask? I assume you get these casks externally?
So it's a barrel trade. What we do is the first whiskey is going to be new American oak, lightly charred, and then our whiskey goes into the barrel for about 3 to 6 years. This is what is the result of that. These empty casks are then rolled over to about 40 different breweries in the Pacific Northwest. And I have one example of it here. Ooh. This is The Abyss by Deschutes.
And you know, Deschutes is the shit.
You know, that's what people have said, and that's what people always say. So we're glad to be one of their partners, because full transparency, The Abyss is an annual release. So they're pulling from different distilleries, and our yields aren't going to be enough for what they're doing with this beer, right? But this is just one example of an Imperial Stout. We work with different styles of stouts, but one thing through and through is that they're all Pacific Northwest breweries. So Deschutes gets our barrel. This goes into barrel. Most stout beers are going to be laid in our cask for about 9 months before they're ready to roll off. And then once that is rebottled, what happens to our cask is they come back to us and we take the first whiskey we had tonight, dump it back into those barrels, and a year and a half later, you get this. Wow. So 18 months from here to here, same whiskey, original Westward barrels to then stout seasoned. But I tell you what, a finish of stout beer across different Pacific Northwest breweries, it just makes such a big difference on the entire character that's in our Glen right now.
And you know, we know that it's the stout beer cask, so maybe that plays into it, but I swear you can smell it on the nose. I'm getting like a little chocolate, a little coffee, something.
What I was going to say, Mike, I am not a beer fan by any stretch of the imagination. And one of the things I don't like about beer cask whiskey is that it smells like beer. Here is just a hint. I don't think it's overwhelming at all, but I do get those chocolate notes.
And that's the beautiful thing about Westward, Aaron. When you think about it, we're beer first. And a lot of people, it depends who I'm talking to, but really harping on the culture and the craft that we've learned from years of brewing experience. I mean, when you nose Westward Classic, our original whiskey, you do get those honeys, those citrus, those stone fruits that you typically pull out of a pale ale beer. And then on this, like you said, that coffee, that vanilla, for me, I get a lot of hazelnut that comes off of that nose. These are all notes that you pull off of traditional stout beers. But again, it's a marriage between different styles, but it's always balanced that at the end of the day.
This is really good.
And it's amazing that the 18 months really changed the base into something completely different.
Totally. But it's still whiskey.
To bring it into what y'all are doing at Booze Dancing is when you talk about
what are we doing, Hector? Well, we don't even know.
From
what
I've
doing.
Seen, you all definitely see when the writing is really good, because there's all of these. Yes, there's cohesiveness, but there's also a through line that's carried that really draws you back, right? And for me, I think it's that malt characteristic, and it's not malty grainy, but it's malty coffee that you find within each of our expressions. And if there's one thing that I should have done when shipping out samples was sending you some of our malted barley, because chewing on that really gives you the essence of what we're amplifying through our entire process, and you'll find it in every dram.
I usually get a bag of two row every day with my feed, so that's okay.
I didn't get a lot of like the stout on the nose, but in the taste, it really comes through. Like a light chocolate note. You know, it's not overpowering. It's not like it's the whole, it's not dominant. No. It just kind of adds another layer to what we had before.
Yes.
I think there's a real nuttiness to it too.
And it almost seems as if you used a different malt when you made it. Like you used some chocolate malt mixed in or something, as opposed to just being 100% two row with the way the barrel kind of laid into this.
It's still all high pale malt. And the beauty of it is, again, since we're working with so many breweries, some breweries put out heavy chocolate imperial stouts while others put out drier stouts where that nuttiness really does shine through. So it's honestly all because of our master blender, or our lead blender, Miles Monroe, and his team. It's literally him and Otis putting things together, and under Chris Sean, our master distiller, his guidance. Like, it's that small team that is so in tune to what every single bottle of produced Westward should end up tasting like, that we're able to take all of those ingredients and put something out that's so consistent.
Do you guys do any single barrel programs?
We do. So every single barrel that is pulled out of Jenny is going to be from Otis and from Miles. And there are so many delicious single barrels that are just looking for the right home. So if you're ever in market or find one in market, Westward single barrels are so different from the core range. Like there's so many single barrels that are out there just to be out there, but we're so intentional with what we're putting out.
So we'll move on now. This is boozedancing.com podcast. What we watch when we drink. It's so many damn W's. That's the problem. It's like West word, more two more W's to make me crazy or to make me wazy. So we can talk a little bit about things that we have watched now. This is always a fun segment for us, Hector, because Angelo and I have a problem because we watch too much TV. Not so much Mike. And we just kind of ramble through all the things that we can remember that we've watched since we spoke before. Since you're our guest, what have you watched recently that you've gone through and really liked and or made an impression on you, or that you hated?
Well, what do you like typically? I mean, are you like sci-fi, fantasy, comedy, drama, or are you like a mix of everything as long as it's good?
Yes, so I like a mix of everything. It doesn't have to be good, but it does have to keep my attention. Most of the shows that I've watched come by way of recommendation from friends and family, especially my little sister and her boyfriend. So most recently I finished The Bear, and being in the industry that I'm in, it hits a lot harder to home, even though I've never been in the back of the house. I've never been like strictly in the restaurant industry, but I'll tell you what, I feel for every character on that show. So but yeah, that's one of the latest things that I watch, and I hope they get it back out.
That was a great show. I've seen it a couple times. So, because like I'm working from home, so I've got a TV in front of me. When it's a little slow, I just pop it on and just let the thing go.
That's beautiful, and I admire that, because I can't watch things a second way through, especially when it comes to TV series. Like my wife can watch Friends on repeat, and once it's one and done, I'm kind of okay with moving on and finding something new.
It's hard for me to go back only because there's so much other things to watch. I will pick out an episode here and there. I've watched that. Is it episode 7 of The Bear where it's just the one shot?
Oh my God. That super stressful episode.
Oh, I love that episode.
Wait, it was a one take shot?
It was all one take. I think they did like 3 takes of it.
Yeah.
And then they just got it right. Yeah.
What?
All one shot.
Those are long episodes too.
Now, I gotta tell you, my wife started watching that show with that episode.
Oh God.
And walked away not liking the show. My daughter and I told her, start from the beginning. That's not the show.
Was that the one where Cousin gets stabbed in the butt?
Oh my God, that was hysterical.
Cousin!
That was it, right? Okay, now that you said that, I could see it being literally one camera take. That's amazing.
And just the technical side of making a shot, that shot is insane to think about. It's just crazy. in a, such a small space, even though it's on a set. Our last podcast, we talked about The Hunt for Red October and working on a quote-unquote submarine and how difficult that is to live on a submarine and how difficult it was to shoot a lot of the scenes in a makeshift submarine on a set. It's got to be difficult to do that little 20-minute scene, 15-minute scene, one camera.
That's crazy. People
flying around.
What I really loved about the show, too, is like much like The Hunt for October, they just throw you in the middle of the action. They don't explain anything, and you just kind of pick it up as you go.
A day in the life.
It's a baptism by fire.
Have y'all ever been in a kitchen?
I've worked in restaurants. I've never worked in the actual kitchen, but you know, I worked as a busboy and as a waiter and all that kind of stuff. So I saw the lunacy.
So you've walked through it.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
I was about to say, so being in where I'm in right now, it doesn't happen too often, but when I was in distribution, sometimes if there was a misorder or a mispick or somebody needed an emergency delivery and it's during operation hours, sometimes I'd have to dolly things in through the kitchen, and I'm a big guy, so I can only imagine the tight spaces that these camera rigs are running towards, so... That's amazing.
Back of the house is absolutely bananas. I used to work at a restaurant in Philly, and it was pretty big. It was a Cajun restaurant.
Okay.
Magnolia Cafe, and the restaurant was like, it went pretty deep. It the front was on Locust Street, and it went all the way to the back, the bar through to the next like the next alley, and it was probably I think 40 tables maybe. And I would work like Friday or Saturday nights, and then I'd work brunch. It was absolute lunacy.
Absolutely.
The waiters were crazy, and all the waiters were like, you know, they all worked at like they went to Philadelphia College of Art, so they were all like artsy fartsy students. They were nuts. They were just like, you know, there'd be like a half bottle of wine, they grab it, they start pouring it off, drinking the whole time. It was absolutely bananas. Absolutely,
man.
Oh, it was brutal, but still, it was a fun job though. When you're 20, 21, it was great. I don't think I want to do it now.
No, too stressful. Hector, anything else you've seen recently that you...
So these you may not think are really like notable shows, but All American, The Rookie, and Bel Air are three shows that I've watched this year. And I don't consume a lot of like series, but my sister got me onto all of those.
I don't know that I know of any of those three.
Yeah, for sure. So in a quick nutshell... All American is a story of a football player who grew up in Crenshaw, but then having to move and play in Beverly Hills to have basically escape the hood for to better his future. So,
network is it on?
Good question. All American, Netflix. Netflix.
Okay.
Really? Okay. Got it. And that sounds cool.
The Rookie is a cop show.
It's Nathan Fillion, right?
I believe so.
Oh, my wife watched it. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, just a second take on life. Somebody who...
He's older, right?
Yeah, and then makes his way up through the rookie program of the LAPD. Or is it? I believe it's LAPD or NYPD.
I think it is.
And then Bel Air is a refresh of Prince of Bel Air, and it's more of a... dramedy,
but more intense, I think, right?
Oh, for sure. Like way more drama than comedy, but it still has those like one-liners that pop in.
Is the character supposed to be from Philadelphia?
Yeah, and they like dive into the backstory a little bit more too.
Okay.
And what have you consumed?
It's a long list.
It's a long list.
A lot. So there's been a lot. I just finished up Industry last night, the HBO show.
The new season.
Yeah, it's a crazy show. It's like...
I haven't watched any of it. I think I want to start it.
It's like Euphoria meets Succession, but it's more Succession than Euphoria. And it gets a little crazy. And I'm not going to pretend to understand all the finance gobbledygook that's going on, because I just don't know.
So it's in the finance world.
Yes. The first season starts off that it's basically a bunch of new recruits at this company called Pierpoint. And I guess Pierpoint is like, I don't know, what's the big like investment house in New York? Like a Morgan Stanley or a Bear Stearns or whatever the new big guy is. And it's all these first year recruits, and they're basically just trying to like earn their stripes and try to make it on,
nice.
You know, get picked up again for the next year. And they're just nuts. I mean, they're all young kids. So there's like clubbing and a whole lot of drugs. There's a whole lot of sex. They're all a bunch of backstabbing crazies. And, you know, they're learning the ropes. So, you know, and it also deals with the adults in the room. One guy was on, I can't think of his name now. I don't know if he, oh, I think he was he on Lost? I don't know the actor's name. He's very good. And the main girl on the show, who is Harper, she's really good. Ken Lung, not sure how you say his name. It's L-E-U-N-G. I'm trying to see what he was on.
He looks familiar. Hey, there's a Duplass in that show.
Yes, Jay Duplass is in season two. He's great.
Yeah,
it's a really, really good show. But it gets very intense. It gets a little not convoluted, but confusing to me. But you kind of get what's going on. You know, you could just kind of figure it out from the kids and all that stuff.
This is on HBO?
Yes.
Okay.
So I finished Industry. I need to actually watch it again because I just want to know what the hell happened. The finale, there were double, triple, quadruple crosses.
You have to watch it again?
I can't make heads or tails out of it.
Dang.
Yeah, it was just insane. There's so many things going on.
You need a map?
You know, it's crazy. So, yeah, finish that up. I started Cobra Kai season 5, and then I got into like the fourth or fifth episode. I'm like,
season 5? That's where it's at already?
Yeah. It's just, you know what my problem with the show is? The biggest problem with the show, I think, is Ralph Macchio. It's terrible. He's the worst part of the show.
Yeah, we just started watching it again.
Mike, you watch it, right?
We just dropped the next one.
Yeah, but what's his name is great. Who was the bad guy from Karate Kid?
Billy Zabka.
Yeah, Zabka's great. He's fantastic. But Ralph Macchio is horrible. He is just he's just the worst.
He's not subtle.
No, he's just terrible. He is just terrible. We can come back to me. Let's go around.
Mike, what have you watched?
Oh, we started watching Cobra Kai again. And, you know, they love Cobra Kai. They think the whole show is the greatest show ever. And I just sit there and go, really? Okay. But, and the wife, she's a huge fan.
They being your kids.
And, you know, they're, you know, let's binge watch. Let's binge. One more. I'm like, no more. What a bit. And She-Hulk dropped. So we're watching She-Hulk, which, you know, any of the Marvel shows that come out, you know.
How is that?
I fear that if I don't watch them when they introduce these characters in the movie, I won't know enough. So it's like, this is like the pre-reading till the movie starts. Because they're all supposed to be in the new Avengers. I want to watch these shows before the movie drops. So, as their phase 4, 5, and 6, or whatever these phases are for Marvel now that they finished, killed everybody off in the first group.
I watched the first episode of She-Hulk and I wasn't impressed, but I understand it gets much better because it's the first is really all the setup and it really kind of starts pulling together in 2, 3, and 4. So I think I may actually go back to it. And I love Tatiana Maslany. So it really pained me not to like that first episode.
Yeah. And the interplay with Mark Ruffalo was really good. And, you know, says, who's your best friend? And she starts naming somebody. He says, no, yeah. Spandex.
The humor was good. I wasn't fond of the CG.
Yeah. She looked like Princess Fiona. She looked a little Shrekish.
She looked Shrekish, yeah.
But it got better. And I read something and they said, because Ruffalo has played the character in 6 movies, they've got so much more pixelation for him.
Yeah.
From all the angles and all the TV and all the everything. And they don't have that for her. So they said, made her look like him, and that would have been bad.
Yeah.
Or they could have done what they did. And they're like, as the series has gotten better, I think she's gotten better looking. I mean, in terms of the way the CGI works, I think she looks more like a green person as opposed to a cartoon character.
Yeah.
So,
anything else from Mike? You guys, anything else you guys have gotten through?
Oh, like I said, I have a long list.
We still haven't gotten through half the stuff we were supposed to watch this summer. Stupid children and their activities.
I'm going to rattle through this list real quick.
Sure.
So Abbott Elementary, we mentioned Industry. I watched this show called This Fool on FX.
I want to watch that.
That was pretty good. That was pretty funny.
That's an LA-based show, right?
Yes.
LA market.
Yeah, I don't know the two actors.
I think they're stand-up comedians.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty good. So I'm not sure where it takes place in LA. I kind of blasted through it. It was actually a lot of fun, though. The one guy works at not a halfway house, but like a rehabilitation type place for former LA gangbangers that went to prison and they're trying to transition into like regular life.
Yeah.
you know, and what's his name runs it? Michael Imperioli runs it.
Oh, Michael.
And he's really good. He's so good in it. I have to say, it's nice to see him again. You know, nice to see him doing something fun and doing a comedy. So the one guy works there, you know, working with a lot of guys. His cousin, or is it his uncle? His cousin just gets out of prison, and he's trying to get him through the program. They're both living at either his mom's or his grandma. I think it's his mom and his grandmother's house, and just all the stuff. He's got like this long-lasting relationship with this girl that's like on again, off again, and she's a little crazy, and all the stuff that goes on with them. And it's just a fun show. It really is just a really fun show. So This Fool, Never Have I Ever, season 3. Better Call Saul finished up.
That was good. Then both of those last two.
Better Call Saul was great.
Better Call Saul was great.
Let's see. Cobra Kai season 5, which I think I'm going to finally just throw in the towel. I saw half of The Rehearsal.
The Rehearsal? What's that?
That was the one with Nathan Fielder.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The weird one.
That show is just nuts.
I don't know. That one I don't think I can hang with.
The first couple episodes were good, and then I just kind of lost interest in it. Then I watched his other show, which he did a few years back, called Nathan For You.
That's where he started. Yeah, that was it. That's what got him a gig.
So I watched a little bit of it. My youngest started watching it. He loved it. But I'm listening to it. I'm like, should you really be watching this?
Sure, Dad.
Let me see. What We Do in the Shadows. I have to finish up this season. Clarkson's Farm with Jeremy Clarkson.
Yeah, I heard that's actually pretty good.
That was actually really good. That was really good.
Where is he from?
Did you ever see Top Gear?
Yeah.
The original guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, the American one wasn't good.
So one of the main guys, Jeremy Clarkson, he bought a farm in the Cotswolds in England. And he knows nothing about farming, but I guess he's got a ton of cash.
Top Gear money.
I think he bought like a 300-acre farm in the Cotswolds, and he's learning how to run it. It's really interesting. I mean, he's his usual goofy self.
Yeah.
And you've got like real people that like run farms and are explaining like, well, this is what you're supposed to do, and this isn't what you're supposed to do. And yeah, it's a really nice Lamborghini tractor, but it's a little bit too much. It's a little bit too much. So it was neat. It's a really good show. Atlanta just restarted season 4. So the first two episodes dropped last week. The Offer, which you recommended, and I watched back in August.
I offered The Offer, yes.
Yeah, The Offer was actually kind of fun. That's about it, I think. I think that's it, which is plenty. And I'm watching this because I'm writing this down, and I'm like, I really need a life.
That's all right. TV's good. TV's healthy.
It's fun.
I'll kind of whip through a couple things that I watched. I just finished Entrapped, and this goes back to a previous guest of ours, Greg Swartz, who did the Water of Life. Hector, you know the Water of Life
movie?
Oh, was this the Iceland show?
Yeah. So Greg was a guest on our show
nice.
A couple years ago, right? And he recommended a show on Amazon Prime, or whatever it's called, Prime Video, called Trapped. And it was a show in Icelandic noir. Is that the genre? And about this little town in like weird little bay up in the north part of Iceland. And it's a cop drama show. And everyone gets trapped because of the weather in this bay while they have to solve a crime. And it's all in Icelandic. Just the setting of it's just amazing. And then there was a second season on Prime. And then out of the blue, like 2 weeks ago, this thing on Netflix shows up called Entrapped. Not Trapped, Entrapped. And the lead character, this big burly guy with a big beard, the head cop, he's in there. Wait, is this the same show? So somehow Netflix got it from Amazon. And it's like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years later and picks up on another crime to solve. It was a little more cop-ish on this season and less about where they are.
Do they have the first series also on Netflix, or is that still on Prime?
That's a good question. I did not notice that.
Okay.
Good question, though. I don't know if it's on Prime anymore. So anyway, I really liked it because I like that his name is not pronounceable, but he's actually been in a lot of American shows as well. I just finished Umbrella Academy. Speaking of comic book shows, Umbrella Academy season 3. And that was odd, interesting. I watched Paper Girls on Prime, which I understand just is not being picked up for season 2. And it was, I think that's based on a graphic novel, I believe. And about four girls in 1990s suburban Detroit, Cleveland. And on the night after Halloween. Is that Hell Night? And some crazy outer space thing happens. And these four girls have to kind of figure out how to survive and save the world. It was good. Never Have I Ever. And you mentioned that too. That was season 3, I believe. Mindy Kaling's kind of look back at her high school years.
You know, what's funny with that show is I really shouldn't like it.
No, you shouldn't like it.
But then you get sucked in and you get wrapped up in this nonsense and it's just so good. It's such a good show.
It's got this Mindy DNA and I can see her in that character and how she probably grew up, you know, in some suburban area and probably being ostracized for being an Indian American and trying to be popular when you're not popular and trying to be smart, but you don't want to be too smart. And dealing with all the high school crap that you got to deal with in your high schooler. It's just a nice slice of American life in a kind 57 sludge of people at a school. It was fun. By the way, her other slice of life of her own life is called
Sex Life of College Girls.
That's it. That's her her college right. years. And right. I think the second season of that's coming out. And the girl who's sort of her in this is, a girl who wants to be a comedy writer and she's right. kind of trying to get through college and all the craziness in college and trying to be on like the Harvard Lampoon of the school that she's at.
Also another show I shouldn't like, but really did.
Yeah, I did too. I thought it was funny. I thought it was really good.
Going back to that Entrapped. So the lead guy is Olafur Dari Olafsson.
Look at his IMDb. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He was in The Tourist. Remember that one with Jamie Dornan?
Yeah, he's in The Tourist.
He was like the killer, right?
Yeah. He's really good.
He's huge.
He is not a small person.
So he's like 6'2". He's got to be what, 280, 290?
Oh, at least.
Big he's guy. A massive guy. He's yeah. really good, though.
He is so good in Trapped. Trapped, Entrapped, whatever the hell that is called, whatever, depending on which network you're watching. Stranger Things season 4, it's a while ago, but I got through that. Hector, you saw it too, it looks yeah. like. I enjoyed it. It was good. It's weird seeing these kids growing up. Thoughts?
I'm sure this isn't gonna sit well with a lot of people, but Dustin's not my favorite.
Yeah, me too.
There's just something about him that
it's annoying as hell.
Yes, but I did respect them towards those last episodes.
The kid that they brought in who played guitar, I don't remember the character's name. He was great. I watched a show that came out in two sections on Netflix called The Beauty Queen of Jerusalem. It was an Israeli show and goes back and forth amongst, I don't know, two or three different eras in Israel from the 1920s to the 1940s when the war is starting and back and forth. And you're following this family who are Sephardic Jews. The guy owns a shop and dad was a merchant. He's a merchant and everyone's getting along in the 20s and the father dies. And this kid has to take over the shop with his kind of mean old mom. And they're kind of well-respected business people. And then the British are kind of taking over the area and it gets ugly. This guy gets married to, he's sort of forced into a marriage by his mother. And ultimately they have these daughters and it becomes about the daughters a little more than we're not more or less. And it goes, and you see the daughters grow from little girls up to adult. And it's really good drama. One of my Israeli friends didn't like it because he said the dialect wasn't accurate for that era of time. The guy that stars in the lead in Schnitzel about another Israeli show is the kind of the lead character in this show. And the only other thing I want to bring up is I watched 80% of the Taylor Hawkins tribute concert about a month ago from live from Wembley, an amazing live concert. And it was streamed live on various places, YouTube, MTV, Paramount. Foo Fighters put it together and they had people from all over the musical world come and play with them. And it was a really great tribute to Taylor Hawkins and ending with Paul McCartney. And it was just a great show. And they are going to do it again, not as large of a show, I think in 2 weeks here in Los Angeles at the Forum. So good tribute to the late drummer of Foo Fighters, Taylor Hawkins. So that was a lot of TV. It's probably that much of what we really watched. for all of you at home, that was my fingers getting really close together. We're going to move on to whiskey number three.
What's behind door number three, Hector?
Pinot Noir.
Oh, Pinot.
I like how the labels sort of match the what's going in the bottle.
Yeah, that's cool.
We try. 2020 was a big year for Westward. Aaron, you have a few of our heritage bottles.
I got the t-shirt.
See, you've got the t-shirt, I've got the hat, and if you notice, this is not our branding, so marketing would not be happy with us.
Yeah,
I think even my Glen is old too, but these bottles, the way our entire brand is conveyed, just looking at the original, it's totally embodying what our story is, and it just happens to look good too. I mean, we come from brewing, so that right there is a brewer's hawk on our label. This is a natural bird that flies around fields of barley, protecting it from pests. And when you look at the actual cut of our entire bottle, that's our water source, the Cascade Mountains. And yeah, the colors, we've got them pretty good. And this is a great whiskey to dive into with having all that said. Just remember, we're coming from the Pacific Northwest. So this right here is paying tribute to what really put Oregon on the map, which is Pinot Noir grape as a wine varietal. And this is us working with vineyards, about 14 of them now within the Willamette Valley. And these are family friends who are part of our whiskey club. We're part of their wine clubs. And these aren't like huge wineries, but some big names out there are Bergstrom and Suser. And what they're doing is, when you look at Pinot Noir red wine, this is going to be aged in French oak barrel. And these barrels, they're going to be used for about 3 vintages to age their Pinot Noir wine. And after 3 vintages, that's about 6 years given, we get those barrels from these vineyards and we're able to put our original whiskey that we started off with into these French oak casks, and we leave them there for about 2 more years. So that 3 to 6 year old American single malt Westward Classic is now finished for what some whiskeys have as their traditional age statement. So a 2-year finish is really doing a lot of things to our whiskey. And Pinot Noir, when you have it as a wine, do you all drink wine by any chance?
A little bit.
A little.
Even if you don't drink wine, when you look at red wine versus white wine, red wine's definitely going to be a little bit on that drier side. When you look at Pinot Noir, it's definitely a drier style. But for us, when you look at the world of whiskey, a lot of whiskeys that do finish in wine are typically in your big, bold, sometimes usually fortified wines like stout and port. So this is our Pacific Northwest take. And what I find is it marries a lot of the beautiful things you find in red wine without overpowering the whiskey or making it very clawingly sweet.
This is very fruity on the nose. You get a lot of those kind of winey notes on there.
For me, bright red fruits, like super bright red cherries and strawberries on the nose.
I also thought that the malt came through again, where you really didn't get the malt so much with the stout edition. But with this one, the malt's back, which is nice. I like that.
Yeah. And so I never talked about the proof on the stout, but that we actually raised up a notch from 90 to 92. So going up from 45 to 46% ABV. And that's just so our whiskey can stand up to the flavors that come through on stout. For me, it rounded off a lot of that baking spice and that malty character. Whereas when you dive into wine and Pinot Noir in particular, it's so light of a finish that it kind of allows that spice to just come out differently. For me, when you look at Pinot, when you look at this whiskey, I get memories of like Thanksgiving time. So a lot of like toasted graham cracker, pie, all of that comes to mind when I'm drinking this. And that chocolate that we found in stout and the original, here it's coming off more as like a baker's chocolate on the back end and almost like a chocolate covered espresso bean.
Is this also 46 or is this higher?
This is dropped to 40, But okay. If you're perceiving it as a little bit higher, the reason I tend to see that happen is because when you look at wine and wine finishes, especially in Pinot Noir, there's a tannic effect. So the tannins dry out your palate and that perception of heat goes up a little bit.
Oh, that has got some nice spice to it. But it's a little different from like the base one. You know, you get a little bit more, like you said, you get a little more of that fruitiness in there.
It's really good. I like the dark fruits in it.
But it's not as dry as like if it was like a sherry cask or like a fortified wine cask.
No, it's not that dry.
A little bit softer, but you still get the spice.
Yeah, and I think you get the brighter fruits instead of getting like more of the stone fruits or raisins or something. This gives you, like you said, the cherries, the strawberries.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's brighter. Yeah, but it's not as much where you get those other, if you get like the port pipe or you get one of the sherried ones.
Yeah.
You get a whole lot more of that.
Let's talk about this category that's been around for a while, but not officially, American single malt. Talk about American single malt, what it's been and what it's going to be officially, and the rules therein and how it all relates back to Westward.
So for Westward in particular, the last thing we are trying to be is a Scottish single malt made in America. That is the best way to dive into the conversation of what is American single malt. And what it basically is we are trying to have a set definition of parameters for American single malt so that people who are walking up to a liquor store shelf or reading a restaurant or bar menu and they see American single malt, that they kind of know and understand what they're opening in and what they're about to receive a pour of that whiskey. So for us at Westward, we are taking all of the wonderful tradition that single malt has from around the world, and we're just doing that with American quality ingredient and tying in some of the different techniques that we've picked up in craft beer brewing. Okay, when you say whiskey in America, it's easy for bourbon, it's easy for rye to be the first types of whiskeys that come to mind. When you step out of America and you say whiskey, it's easy and it's commonly known to see single malt as the upper echelon of whiskey around the world. For us, when you look at American single malt, we don't want it to necessarily mean take everything that has been done and founded in Ireland and do that here, or what's been popularized and is king of single malt in Scotland and do it here. But we'd like it to be 100% malted barley, made, distilled, mashed, matured here in America, and then aged and matured in oak casks. And pretty much that's, amongst other things, what the loose parameters are. When we say American single malt, we want people to know and understand that this isn't your different style of bourbon. So that is kind of where the legislation that we're trying to get pushed through with the TTB is. But like you've said, it's American single malt and using malted barley as the mash bill as 100% has been around for decades, and over 200 distilleries are doing it now. So now it's all about really getting it into paper and out into the public, just so the category can be recognized and more people can understand that it's not just another bourbon or rye, but something in and of itself.
And I believe we're at the point where the TTB has offered up the concept to the public for discussion. And now we're waiting for those notes to come back and then for the TTB to go in and make a final conclusion on it to make that a category like bourbon is, or straight bourbon is, or rye is, or straight rye is, correct?
You're exactly correct. And where today's September 20th, by the 27th, that public commentary period will close. And right now, all of the comments that are coming out and all the questions that are being asked are so that the TTB can help funnel and find and figure and fine tune what these guidelines of the standard of identity for American single malt will be.
originally there was a group of distilleries in states mm-hmm. who were making single malt under their own
standards of identity,
and then got together. You guys, Delbach, Westland, I want to say like 20, 25 distilleries, maybe St. George as well, got together to kind of create a commission to do some lobbying to the TTB to get this thing off the ground. And it's taken quite a while. It seems like 10 years ago, Andrew, when we were starting to see this stuff in at festivals and the concept of this term, more than just something that somebody put on a label. It has some legal definition. We are actually getting close. We're almost there.
You know, the traction, the groundwork, everything has been put into place. And it is a big part for the movement within American whiskey. And Westward has been a part of the trajectory that the American Single Malt Whiskey Commission, which you had brought up, that's where we're at today, right? It's because all of these distilleries have come together to help push all of this over the line. But at the end of the day, I only see positives in it. If the American single malt category comes to fruition, fingers crossed, then it's only going to be the floodgates opening to the possibilities and to the public and everyone flocking towards figuring out what American single malt is. And that can only do well for brands and distilleries like ourselves. But for us at Westward, though we've helped lead this and we're pushing forward for it, at the end of the day, we just want to make the best whiskey we can make. So this can only help us, and we're hoping that it happens.
It's really nice that we've seen this over the, whatever it's been, how long this has been going on, 10 years or so. These independent distilleries working together toward a common goal. It's kind of rare when you see that in industry.
Trust me, we've got message boards and Slacks and all of these discuss boards. So when you look at the world of distilling, it's very competitive. But at the end of the day, if somebody has a question, we're more than happy to answer it and help it, because there have been times when we've all first started distilling, right? And we had questions. So that's what mentors and friends are for. But at the end of the day, we're in it to build a brand, right? So
that's great. Well, let's move to our last kind of category, which we kind of crossed over from our previous one a little bit. Hector, do you have anything you're in the midst of watching?
We're watching House of the Dragon and Only Murders in the Building.
I got to get back to that.
I got to get back to it, too. Did you watch season one?
Yes. So I've watched all of them as a third party watcher, not on the couch with the main people watching. So it's my wife and her sister, and they bond over that. So every time I'm able to just like sneak in and pop my head in and get through an episode, that's how I've been consuming that one.
We didn't start season two yet, and I'm looking forward to it. And I heard it's actually really good. We love season one.
It won me over. It took a little bit with season one, because, you know, you've got kind of like the baggage of those two guys.
Yeah.
And I was never really a big Martin Short fan, but I do like him in this. And yeah. Selena Gomez, I never realized, you know, I don't really know anything about her, but she was great. She was really good. I mean, like you had said before, she played really well with these guys, and she, you know, held her own.
Hector, what do you think about House of the Dragon?
I feel like it's been long enough to where I forgot about Game of Thrones, and now I'm re-sucked into the franchise. it's funny. I was talking to my sister-in-law, and I was like, you know, I wonder if House of the Dragons uses the same theme music as Game of Thrones. And then she looks at me, and she's like, of course it's the same. I was like, oh, it's just been that long that I don't even remember what the main score was.
It is so funny you said that. My wife and I were watching an episode a couple of days ago, and we had the discussion about whether, is it exactly the same? Or if you lay them on top of each other, would they sound a little different? We kind of think that this one's a little bit different in places, the opening sequence. And we've seen the Game of Thrones concert tour a couple of times when it was out. Nice. During the last series. So there's a lot of similarities. It's very funny you brought that up, because I think it's I think it's a little bit different, but it's close. It's really
I'm hoping
close.
It's different just by a little bit, so that way I could win this debate.
Yeah,
I'm sure if I Google it on or throw it on YouTube, somebody's done the overlay.
Are you watching The Rings of Power on Prime?
No, but my mother-in-law is. Funny story. So my wife and I met in college, and she was in love with Lord of the Rings, and I never saw a single one of them. So I made sure to binge the entire franchise. No, just so I can have something to open with.
Nice.
But
things these ladies let us do, right?
But yeah, no, I've heard really good things about The Rings of Power, and that's on Amazon Prime, right?
Correct. It's interesting because I think I like Rings of Power, the ring, whatever it's called, The Rings of Power, better because it's funnier. It's got more humor to it. House of the Dragon is so goddamn serious. It's all politics and of everything, and it's so dramatic. Rings of Power, it's kind of fun. It's kind of light in a lot of ways, but, you know, in that Lord of the Rings kind of way. So I think I'm watching them both, but I think I like that one better.
It's funny. My whiskey mind and like sales attitude turned on when you said that. And honestly, I think the first thing that came to mind was comparing the Westward expressions to each other. Like at the end of the day, they're all really good whiskeys, and Rings of Power and House of the Dragon are very good series. So like comparing them against each other versus just throwing yourself in and enjoying it, you know.
That's funny. We'll bounce around a little bit, but one I'm watching at the moment also, and I know, Ange, you are too, on Apple Plus is Bad Sisters.
Oh, I love that show.
Right? It's really good.
It's so good. It's so fun.
It is a, what's her name?
Sharon Horgan.
Sharon Horgan. It's an Irish-based show about five sisters. Can't remember now. Four? Five? Five.
It's Eva, Becca, Ursula, Gracie, and Bibi.
You are actually scary that you know all those five names. Can you name the three daughters on Petticoat Junction?
Billy Joe, Bobby Joe, Betty Joe.
Oh, my God.
Hey.
Well done.
Well, that's because he went back to, you know, his youth.
Oh, that's come on.
Youth. My youth, too. That was my youth. That's such a good show. It's in a lot of ways, it's a kind of a classic way of TV making today. You set up a premise, and then each episode kind of analyzes one character and their connection to the bigger story. And something we never used to watch in old TV. It was, everything was linear and forward, never linear and backward. And this show bounces back and forth to look at each character and in their, what their connection is to the bigger picture. It's very funny. It's very dramatic. And it also has a, you know, looking at these five sisters are all a little bit different in where they are in life. It's really good. It's not even really a murder drama, right? I don't even think about it as crime drama, but it is.
I just love the drone shots of them just driving along the road.
Oh my God, the drone shots are great. Like Trapped/Entrapped, the beauty of the show is so much a part of it. Seeing the coastline of Ireland is just gorgeous. And like seeing the coastlines of Iceland, it's the same thing. Yeah, I agree. Uh-huh. Those drone shots are great. A couple things I have on my list. I'm watching Legacy, the true story of the LA Lakers on Hulu.
Oh, I got to get to that. How is it?
It probably could be more critical. I mean, it feels like the Lakers are promoting this thing or made it themselves. It hasn't gotten totally delved deeper into some darker topics as deep as I think a regular documentary would have. But it's still really interesting. I've learned a few things. And as much as a Laker nerd as I am, I've actually learned a few things myself. And a little side note to that is that the Showtime Lakers, the 80s Lakers, just had a reunion in Hawaii, and they got a lot of the players back. Pat Riley came, and they actually were running through drills in Hawaii somewhere. And there's pictures on Lakers have posted pictures on Instagram, and James Worthy on Twitter posted a bunch of pictures. It's great. And these guys are all what, 60 plus.
Yeah. Did they have an orthopedic surgery team on hand?
There's a picture of Kareem. So there's good. A picture of Kareem. Kareem is 75 and he's taking skyhooks. It's
dang,
awesome.
That's cool. Great.
And Magic, you know, running the break, and Magic is a little heavier than he was, you know, 30 years ago. But it's great. And Riley running practice. And it looks like they're really running a practice. It's pretty cool. And I'm watching Archer season 12 or 13 on Hulu. I'm like, I'm That's just started a couple weeks ago. So that's my little list of ongoing or what I'm watching. Mikey, what are you watching?
All my NCIS shows are coming back on. So, you know, I got to watch those again.
Oh, look at you. So it's
endless fun.
Fall season is here.
It's here. And Cobra Kai, we were three episodes in. I think there's 10 in the fall. So we got a bunch of those left, which I'll be stuck watching. I don't know. So that's the fall television season's here. Got a lot to watch.
It is here.
Plus, you know, I might actually have some fall baseball here for the first time in a long time.
Us too.
Well, the Dodgers, when was the last time they didn't have fall baseball? Come on.
Yeah.
Ange, anything you're watching that you haven't talked about already?
I mean, again, like with you, I'm still watching Bad Sisters.
Bad Sisters must be almost ending, right? We're like on...
It's 10 episodes. So they're on episode 7, I think.
Okay. A few more weeks. Okay.
Yeah, so there's a few more weeks of that. Again, I got to go back and finish up what we do in the shadows, and I got to pick up.
Oh, I forgot to mention that. Oh my God, it was so good. Oh my God, that show was so good.
Is that one a suspense or horror?
It's a comedy.
Okay. It's a mockumentary of.
So what's it called?
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows. Right. What We Watch in the Shadows. That's us.
I'm so confused.
I know. What We Do in the Shadows, it's on Hulu, right?
It's on FX. It's on Hulu, yeah.
Yeah, and it's that Taiko guy, Taiki, whatever his name
is. Taiko Waititi again.
That guy, yeah, yeah. So it's a mockumentary of four vampires that live in Staten Island. And
Oh my God.
They're four vampires? Four vampires and one familiar human who is helping one of the vampires get through life. And it is hilarious. It's season four?
Yeah, I think so.
In this last season, I don't know if you've seen it, Ange, yet. There's an episode that mocks, spoofs a home improvement show. It is so damn funny because they just nail the whole vibe of those HGTV shows.
Yeah.
Where they come in and, hey, we're going to tear this house apart and we're going to put it back together. And it is so darn funny as he hits the table. So good. Sorry, Ange, I interrupted you.
That's okay. That's all right. Yeah. So Bad Sisters, I got to finish What We Do in the Shadows. I got to go pick up Murders in the Building. That's really it that's going on right now because I last night I was trying to find something to watch and I'm like, oh, I didn't finish What We Do in the Shadows. So then I thought,
Hector, anything else you're in the middle of or?
Nope, not in the middle of, but what I had a question was, what's that Olympic NBA or not Olympic basketball documentary that's coming out? It's about like when the USA team lost and then now it's like their redemption. I think it might be called Redemption.
It's called Redemption. I think it's called Redemption Team. It's the Where's Kobe this? Team, right? I don't know where it's hold on a second.
It should be good.
It might be Netflix or
that sounds pretty good.
It is the first trailer came out a week ago. About the gold medal team in 2008 with Kobe, LeBron.
Yeah, it was like the dream team. Yeah.
It was a dream team because they had lost the previous one, right? In 2004, they lost. And then they came and put this team together. It's like Chris Paul and Jason Kidd and Kobe and Dwayne Wade and LeBron and Carmelo, Chris Bosh, Dwight Howard. It's kind of crazy. And how that team came together. It's kind of the dream team, but just a different era. 14 years later, whatever it was.
Yeah, so when that comes out, I want to watch
that. What is the date of that? Hold on a second. I'm kind of curious about that myself. When does it come out? It comes out on October 7th, which is the first week of the NBA season, I believe. So that kind of makes sense.
Nice. So that is definitely on my watch list.
That's a good one to look at. You must be a basketball fan. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I took note of a legacy because my grandpa's a huge Laker fan. He'll be 91 next month. Woo! So this is
good man.
Thank you. Yeah, this is definitely. I'm always looking for things about the Lakers to put on for him when we're together. So even if they're like old repeats.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap this thing up, all these great Westward whiskeys, which you were so kind of you to send to us. Hector, thank you so much. Last one. Where are we? It looks like it's purple.
Yep, we're at Cask Strength.
Purple for Lakers. Nice.
Yeah, no, I was about to say it's a perfect segue for the Lakers and purple and the Dream Team and having all of these huge stars on one team, so I don't really say much about this whiskey. I kind of let everyone enjoy it and feed off of your reaction and then dive into what it is.
What's the ABV on this?
Let's you tell me.
Don't tell us.
No, so dive into it, and then Angelo, I want all of you to let me know what you think it is.
Well, on the nose, I would not guess too hot. If I didn't know, I wouldn't say it's too hot.
Really? You got the not right really. One?
I do.
I'm thinking, what was it, 54?
I don't notice that. It's not real vapory.
No, I agree.
I get the one, it just keeps just getting me.
So open your mouth a little, go nostril to nostril, yeah. Get through all the ethyl alcohol, and you'll find it.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, it's there, but I don't think it's like, we drink a lot of cask strength whiskey.
Yes.
I don't know that this on the nose is overpowering. Now, let's get to the next part.
So I'm sticking with 54.
Oh, I'm watching Mike's reaction.
I'm going 54.
Yeah, because it's cask strength, I'd say whiskey with a 5, but it doesn't seem like it's much higher than that.
Mm. Taste it. Don't get me wrong, it's good, but it's got some heat.
I say high fives.
High fives all around.
Actually, now that I'm tasting it, I'm going to 57.
57?
57.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd probably go there. I'd probably go there too. Yeah.
A little bit dry.
Yes.
Nice finish.
Now, is this all American oak, or does it get transferred into something else?
So what if I told you that this is exactly what the original is?
That's kind of what I guess.
Coming straight from the barrel.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of what I figured.
So are we locking in at 55?
57.
57 on the high end?
Let me ask you this before I answer that question. This is also a core range item.
It wasn't core range until this year. And now it is readily available. The yield is there for us to have it as a core expression. It's still making it into other markets, though.
There's no batches, so every bottle is going to be the same ABV.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say it's whiskey with a 6.
Okay.
Ooh.
So we got 6, whiskey huh? with a 6. We got a 5.7 on the board.
The second one was just as hot. I think it might be whiskey with a 6.
I'll go 59.
Price is Right rules.
Split the difference.
Price is Right rules.
Price is Right rules.
Closest without going over?
Mike got it.
Oh, really? Mike.
This is 125 proof.
Ooh, 62?
Wow.
62.5?
Yep.
Hey now. I wouldn't guess that.
No, neither would I.
Which is great.
It's got a nice mouthfeel too.
For me, the biggest thing that I get here compared to the classic is more of the oak is pronounced. And that chocolate malty flavor is now coming very forward with a hint of tobacco smoke. And yeah, this is, again, non-age stated, 3 to 6 years, new American oak, lightly charred. So when you look at cask strength, that's also not a defined term, right? So
right.
For us, our entry into barrel is 124. So 125 is as true to cask on a batch level that you'll ever see us at, because our single barrels are ranging from 119 to 133.
This is single barrel, or is it a batch of cask?
This is a batch cask. So
okay.
Original is 100 barrel pull, 40 barrel mingle. So this is just about the same. But since it is a specific sensory smell, taste, sight, you're probably looking at like anywhere between 8 to 40 barrels that we're pulling, depending on how many of these we're trying to push out. This is what turns into classic, what turns into, or what goes into the stout barrels, what goes into the French oak barrels to make that Pinot Noir finish. So this is literally the heart and soul of Westward, and it's what we were thieving out of the barrels back when Aaron, whatever batch number you have on your kitchen counter, this was probably very damn close to what those were before it got proofed down.
This is really good.
It's good.
It's got like a malty, almost like lightly chocolatey finish.
Yeah. And a little drier.
Yes, dry finish, but flavorful dry finish. So I don't like throwing out flavors or things like that. But to me, when I throw out what I experience, it's literally that. I'm putting experiences to what I'm getting out of the whiskey. And for me, if I take a Cheerio and a piece of Baker's chocolate and a shot of whiskey, that's what I'm getting out of this.
That's good. Can I ask you ballpark retail pricing on all these for, let's say, California?
So ballpark, we suggest $74.99 on the classic, $89.99 on the stout and the Pinot, and then $99.99 on the cask strength. For everywhere else, we actually ship to most states in the country. So you can find those prices at westwardwhiskey.com, but we're always wanting everybody to try to support local. Yep. So if you put your zip code on westwardwhiskey.com, you'll find your local retailer, and those prices might fluctuate to your benefit or to not, but you know, everybody's got to find their margin somewhere.
I bet Benash has this, Mike.
Oh yeah.
That is really good. I like that. That's nice.
What's been your favorite tonight?
This one.
I like this one, and I think I like the Pinot cask also.
Yeah, I'd say this one in the stout. I really enjoy the stout.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, not that I didn't like the other ones, but I mean, if you're asking me to pick and choose, I kind of like the Pinot because it's a different take on a wine cask. You know, it's not overly dry. It's got, like you said, a lot of like ripe fruit, like a lot of, you know, I just like the fruitiness of that one. And this one's really, really good. I like this. This is fun.
Yeah, I got to tell you, Hector, I'm seeing you guys more on the shelves in places, which at least in L.A., so either you're doing your job or it's all working, because I'm definitely seeing Westward on shelves in bars and in retail. So you guys are getting out there.
Yeah, we're trying our darnest. So I'm glad it's working. And y'all one tend to enjoy Scottish whiskey. So having Westward poured tonight and there being positive feedback from you is showing that we're doing something right to the Scotch tradition, but we're definitely taking a different approach. And now it's about getting it out there and getting the masses to really understand what we're doing. So I'm glad we're making the right moves.
It's really good.
Well, Hector, we can't thank you enough for coming on to What We Watch When We Drink.
Thank y'all for having me. Yeah.
And staying on. We've gone long again.
We've run long again. And only because one of our threesome here took a little nap.
It's okay. It was a good day.
Hector, thank you. This was really fun. Cheers to you and to Westward. And good luck with all your endeavors with getting this stuff out and about in the country and everywhere else.
Thanks for having me, okay?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, cheers. Thank you. Cheers, sir.
Cheers, Hector.
All right, gents. So we did it again.
That was fun. We did it again. Episode number 1,447.
It only feels like episode 1,147. It's actually only episode 3, but you know, it feels like a lifetime.
Whatever. We're pros. It feels like we've been doing it forever.
Semi-pros.
Semi-pros. That was a really good episode. Hector's a really great guy. I really enjoyed that.
And he sent really good stuff.
All right. So, sir, as always, a pleasure. Thank you to you. Thank you, Mike, for waking me up. Hector, thank you for joining us, and thank you for the whiskey. Gents.
Thanks, Westward.
Gents, all right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye, boys. Good night.
If you enjoy this show, please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, Audible, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can also find us on boozedancing.com. And if you have any questions, comments, show, or drink suggestions, email us at boozedancing@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.